John Hazrey 1, where were you born, please?
In London, the East End of London.
Whereabouts in the East End?
I was born in Bethnal Green.
Which year was this?
In 1924.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Bethnal Green?
No. Started life in... My father, I've explained to you, my father was a Grenadier Guardsman in the First World War, and he moved away from there to Dagenham in Essex, which was a new LCC estate. And I don't know if you remember the Lloyd George and the famous saying that they were building homes fit for heroes. Well, he was one of the men from the First World War, and they put up this enormous council estate and with new schools and to try and bring away children and families away from the East End of London. And we had about 4 years there, but we'd come from an extended family in East London, and my mother was unhappy in Dagenham. She'd come away from her mother and other relatives. So for 4 years we were in Dagenham, and then we went back to Stratford East, which is the east side of London, Stratford East, and we spent 5 years there. That's where I mainly got my education, and I went to a reasonably good school there, the Deanery in Stratford, a school for boys, and we had a very happy time there. I was very happy. But overall, I had a very happy childhood. My family were a Christian family, father and mother, and I had three brothers and three sisters, and we were all very happy. My dad was always in very good employment. He worked for Charrington's Brewery, but never ever out of work, so we were fortunate in that respect. So right through the 30s, we never went without, you know. It was quite... a good family life. I always feel that I'm very privileged to have been in such a lovely family.
What did you do on leaving school?
Well, mother, I explained about her family. Her father was the son of a quite wealthy farmer in Edinburgh, and he was the eldest son, and he eloped with the milkmaid to London. Caused a terrible rumpus in the family. But he came to London. In fact, he was employed in the dairy. They had a big dairy herd up there, just south of Edinburgh, a place called Liberton. And he came south. I think he got fed up with Scotland, and he wanted to explore pastures new. Anyhow, he married my grandmother, who was 15 years his junior. She was a milkmaid on the farm. So they came to London, and there were no cows in London, so he became a blacksmith farrier, and he used to shoe horses in the Whitechapel Road, just near Aldgate, and he was a farrier there, and in fact he stayed there, and he had nine children by her, or she had nine children by him, and they too, a happy Christian family, very nice. You know, I'd inherited all this in an extended family with all my uncles and aunts. This is why I say about East End people, you hear on the television the call blimey mate and all that. Well, we never had that sort of background, you see. And all my aunts, I've still got three of them alive to this day. Very kind to us, looked after us. Within the extended family, they always looked after one another. There was always somebody you could rely on to help you. There were no handouts from governments, you know, or anything like that. So by and large, I could never complain about my boyhood. Now I grew up in East London. It was delightful for me. And I look back, when I lived abroad later on, I used to look at some of the boys who'd been privileged, or so-called privileged, had been to public schools. But they'd never experienced the love that I'd experienced as a boy. You could tell in the conversations with them. So... lovely brothers and sisters, because there's only one brother and one sister left now. The others are all gone. Very close to a brother who went out to Burma. He was in the Royal Air Force. He died when he 43 when he came back, and very close to him. But I've got another brother, he served in the Grenadier Guards, and his son served in the Grenadiers. So the two oldest boys in the family, we of course had gone through the Blitz, and we'd seen the bombing of London, of course the Battle of Britain. And of course we wanted to become pilots. This was all little boys' ambition there, was to become pilots. We saw them out in the skies above. The night time we had to take shelter, it went on for a long time.
Before we go on to the war, if I can just take you back to the beginning of the war, please, when Neville Chamberlain declared war on Germany. Were you at school then, or had you left?
During the Munich crisis, I was going to tell you about my mother wanted her sons not to become manual workers. She wanted them to go on what they called the staff. And to her, that had a certain status about it. She wanted them to become office workers in the City of London. So what happened was that I secured a post with a gold mining company in Moorgate in the city. I was 14 years of age, and I became an office junior in this company. And of course, read all the engineers' reports about the gold mines in Western South Africa. But of course, when war was declared, I was still with this company. I'm 15, 16 years of age. I was also in the cadet service, a sort of territorial cadet service. But as we came into the war, and the bombing started, I had to leave that and go and help with repairing the houses. So the Blitz really determined my future life, you know, because what happened was, when I eventually was old enough to join up, and that was at 17, I went to join the Royal Air Force, I went to them at Romford and I said, like all the others, I want to be a pilot. And their stuck answer was, well, we'd run out of the Spitfires, my lad. You know, you'll have to go where you're told, you see.
Can I take you back to the Blitz? Can you tell me what your memories of the Blitz personally were?
Oh, yes. Well, my memories are this, that when it first started, the very first severe raid was on September the 7th, 1940. And I was living near London Docks at Stratford East, you see, which is West Ham, near the docks. And of course, having left this office job in the city, I then had to took a job in the docks as a timekeeper. Now, this was trawlers and drifters had come down from Harlan, those places, and they were brought into London Victoria Docks for degaussing. They put the degaussing equipment around them, you see. And, of course, I was working for this, they called them ship repairers, but they were sort of converting these ships to mine layers and mine sweepers. And, of course, there were a lot of the crews from the north of England there. But this was going on when the Blitz started, really started on us. Of course, we had the Stukas and all that sort of business. But you still had to go to work, you know. I mean, it was very heavily bombed. I had to walk all the way from Stratford East up to the docks, you know, and it went on day after day. But you never sort of run away from it. Now, mother, at the same time, my father had sent mother away with the younger children. My oldest brother had been evacuated to Kent. So I was left at home with father. And my father was doing the fire watching in Charrington's Brewery. I, of course, was working in the docks. And then in the evening, I'd go to my cadet force and used to go guarding the civil defence offices in East London, around Leighton and Stratford East, you see. But the Blitz... over the 2 years until I went into the Royal Air Force, it was quite regular. And I'd become accustomed to it, like other boys and girls. You see, when I finished in the docks, I was called in to help with repairing houses. The local authority were trying to repair houses quickly so that they could house the families that were still there. So because I became quite expert at putting slates and tiles on roofs, And there were three of us, three boys together. We were at school together. We grew up together in Stratford East. And we became quite adept with tools and things like that, you see. And it was when I went to join up, they said, "Oh, you've been using tools. We need you as a mechanic," you see. So out went the window my opportunity to become a pilot, you see. So it was the fact that I'd been working with tools in the Blitz that the recruiting officer decided that I should be pushed into the technical side of the Royal Air Force, where I first became a flight mechanic and then later a fitter 2A.
Did you have any narrow escapes in the Blitz?
Oh, several. Yes, we did. Several. As teenage boys, three of us together, we would visit various communal shelters. And we meet up with girls. I mean, we were then, what, 15, 16 years of age, that sort of age. And we would go from one communal shelter to another. And in the communal shelter, there were canteens. The ladies would be serving tea and sandwiches and things like that. So for me, that was a nice experience. It was a sort of pleasurable evening life. But, of course, on some occasions, when the raids were quite severe, and one particular case where they severely bombed the Stratford railway yards, the big railway yards at Stratford East, we were down in the, which is now the Central Line tunnel, had just been built, but it wasn't being used as a railway. It just been, the tunnel had been completed, and immediately the local authority made it a shelter. And the shelter went from Stratford East out to Leighton East. And in there, of course, we got a severe bombing one night, and I've written a little story about it, you know, because it was so bad, because I wanted to get home, you see, to my mother was down from Oxford, she'd been up evacuated, and I wanted to get home to her, you see, and the wardens wouldn't let us out, they wouldn't let anybody out of the tunnel, they said, "You're not going out, it's too dangerous." Well, I did get out, I ran out, you know, eventually, from the Leighton end, and God, I just walked over debris for a mile. I mean, houses, shops, public houses were all lying in the middle of the road. I mean, it was just one mess of destruction. Eventually, I got home to this little house that we had, beautiful little house in Mullhead, and I jumped over the back wall, and I could hear her in the Anderson shelter shouting, "Is that you, Johnny?" So I said, "Yeah, you naughty boy, where have you been?" But, of course, there were other near misses. We at several, eventually we lost the house because a bomb dropped just, 20 feet from the flank wall of the house. It was a big bomb crater, and the roof got blown off. The flank wall stood. We lost the front door. Father was looking for another door down the street, you know, to try and patch up the house. The civil defence men came and said, "You can't stay in here. You'll have to go over the school," which had been converted to a casualty clearing station. Mother's, she'd only come down from Oxford, you know, to visit father. Or they were all taken over to the school. I went back to work repairing houses in Walthamstow. You see, everybody had their duties to do. My brother had been there, rest his soul. He grabbed the whole family and threw them all into the corner of the next to the chimney breast, spread himself over them. And he too, you see, was on the staff. He was also an office boy, so we didn't like to get ourselves too dirty, you see. We had this sort of attitude. Anyhow, she told him to go and get father. He went up onto the Leytonstone Road, signalled a car to stop. The car slowed down, but then pressed on. He walked into Stratford Broadway, where the fire station was. The fire engine was pulling out. He's covered in plaster, my brother, because you know what had happened. He said, "I've got to get my dad. He's down at the brewery in Mile End." So they said, "Up on, son." They picked him up. He went on the fire engine, got father. As he was crossing Bow Bridge, the car that slowed down was in the canal, been blown into the canal. I mean, the bombing was going on all the time, you see, all the way over. The East End got a terrible pasting. Anyhow, dad came back, and by that time, all the family were in the school. And Mum took charge. She said, "Right, you two, this is my son, my brother and I, up to Aunt Marion. She lived out just at Waltham Cross, just up the road. The other two went off to Wales, and Mary went off to Oxford, and they put her in service with a Lady Reynolds up near Oxford. She was only 14, my sister. And so the family was sort of distributed. Another brother, he was sent to Swanage in Dorset. He was in a boarding school. So the family was breaking up, but then Mother wanted to bring it back again. You see, this is how it was going. The family were going. Bad bombing, get distributed. Then you had to come back again when it eased up.
What was the address of the house?
Number 1 Maryland Street, Stratford, London East. It was a little 2 bedrooms upstairs, 2 bedrooms downstairs, a scullery and an outside loo. And you never believe the happiness one can have in such a little, tiny little place. I did a drawing of it, because it's all been demolished now, of course. So there were many occasions when the bombing got severe.
Did the bombing frighten you?
At the beginning, yeah. I think the most frightening experience I had was at the time when the Germans went into Holland. That time, I seem to remember that, and a headline on the news that Rotterdam had been bombed. So you can work at the time. I think it probably had been a May time, and I something had happened there. We had so many near misses. I said to my mother, we'll have to get away from here. And there was another old lady, my friend's mother, Maud Kirk, her name was. She became a air raid warden. And when the bombing was so severe, and I thought, God, we'll never cope with all this. And she came out of her little terraced house, they lived opposite us. And I said to her, the place is debris all up the Leighton Stone Road everywhere. I said, what do we do now, Mrs. Kirk? Little old lady, she turned to me and she said, we fight the bastards, Johnny, that's what we do. I thought, oh, God, and she repeated it, we fight the bastards. And I'd never heard her speak like that before. She made her way up the Leighton Stone Road, signed on the dotted line and became an air raid warden. And I thought, when I think back of her, the grit these women had, and to me, they were an example. So you couldn't be scared, with these sort of people, Dear old Maud, I've written about these people in my little booklet I have in there, just because I was so impressed by their courage.
Any other recollections of the Blitz that you can record?
Well, of course, in the docks. When the Stukas used to be diving, you sort of get into a routine. My job on the docks was to work out the wages of these chaps. They were shipwrights, joiners, riveters, holders up, all these various trades in the ship repairing. And my job was to get their tallies and work out how many hours they'd be doing, that sort of thing. Now, of course, there's these drifters and trawlers all the way along the quay. It was the meat bank where the Blue Star Line used to unload all the meat from Argentina. See, it was Lovesti's quay, if you like. On the other side was Ranx's mill. That was set alight that night, actually. Anyhow, what I used to do was, you get in a routine. As they'd come down, I used to jump onto the quay, and I had my little place underneath a concrete where they used to unload the meat. And they used to store the meat in their sort of deep freezer behind. And my little niche was underneath there. I'd get underneath. I had to watch my suit, because I had to wear a blue serge suit being on the staff, you see. And you'd get underneath, but you kept the place clean. And you felt safe underneath there. You had your little niche where you felt safe. Strangely enough, at home, in Maryland Street, when the bombing started, we all went down the shelter. And as time went on, Father, oh, bugger this, he said, I'm not going to get down here. Sod Hitler, this is what the old man used to say to us. I'm going to sleep in my bed. And we tended to go back into the bedrooms again. And you got resigned to the fact, if it's got my name on it, and then we go. But it was nice, actually, though, afterwards, in the work that we did, to repair the houses, and it enabled families to come back into their own homes again. I mean, the inside wasn't all that great, but at least the roof was on and the ceiling was on.
Was there any hatred of the Germans as a result of the Blitz?
Not really, no. See, within East London, there's always this humour, you know. They'd always be telling jokes about Hitler, and you know, but not really. You know, they used to call them all the bees under the sun. I mean, I've walked along New Bern Street and watched them coming out the cloud, these Dornier bombers. They're coming out the cloud, boom, 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 that sound. You knew the distinct sound of all of them. You knew the Stuka, of course, that frightened you out of your blooming life, and you quickly got underneath the undercover. But I've seen them, and I thought to myself, I don't know, what do they look like? Where are those people up there? You know, who are they? I'd never met a German. I never met a German till I crossed the Rhine. Well, I saw the prisoners we brought back in Normandy, but I never met a German or talked to a German. I knew Mr. Solly Silver. He was the Jewish grocer. And he, poor old devil, he'd come from Austria. And because when the war started, they took him and they detained him as an alien, you know. Old Solly, he was our grocer. That's about the only German I knew, you see. Of course, his wife, Rachel, so she was distracted. They'd taken him away and put him inside, you know. 18B, I think they called it. You know, that's a strange thing, you see. I mean, I'd only lived in the East End of London, and we only knew the people. We never travelled off. Now and again, we went on a holiday with what they called the Children's Country Holiday Fund, where they, you know, father had to pay so much for the boys to go away and have a holiday for about 2 weeks. It was really to get the boys out of the East End and give them a bit of country air. I used to go to Somerset, which was very pleasant, with my brother, very nice. But I'd never met a German. Oh, when we got to... when I went to work as the office boy, I had to travel from Maryland Point, as it was then, to Liverpool Street Station. Now, it's a steam train, and some morning when I arrived there, all these sort of just dark-skinned... children, they're teenagers, boys, should we say from about 12 upwards, and they all had baggage labels on their coats with their names and things on it. And the person who was shepherding them was talking to them in another language, which later on I learned was German. Now, these were all the Jewish children that were coming up through the Hook of Holland, and they come up to Liverpool Street, and then various families from Hampstead and Belsize Park and Swiss Cottage, they were meeting them, you see. Now, I never spoke to them, but I looked at them, I thought, oh, they're Germans, is that what they look like? But some of them were a bit swarthy skinned, you know, they were Jewish, obviously. But of course, these kids were going off onto America and other places. This was the exodus from Germany, you know.
Now, can you tell me about joining up, please?
Yes, well, first of all, there was this keenness, not just with me, but with my friends as well. Boys wanted to get into the service. And in 1938, I joined a cadet field regiment. It's called the 85th East Anglian Cadet Field Regiment. It's a Royal Artillery Regiment. It's been part of the Essex Regiment. I joined them. Now, when the war came, what happened was I went to the territorials because three of my uncles had become terriers, and I thought, well, I'm going to join up, you know, I'm going to do something. And I went to a place called The Green in Stratford East, where this artillery headquarters was, and I said, I want to join the terriers. They said, you're too young. And then one chap said, just a minute, he said, we're going to form a band. He said, we can have a cadet band. He said, we'll have a look at you, come back and see us. So I went back to Thorland, and they took me as a band boy, and I played the trumpet, you see. Now, this is going back to 1938. And of course, I stayed with the cadets, and we came down to the coast here on manoeuvres, and it was rather a pleasant experience, but it also prepared me for the Royal Air Force, you know, with the military aspects of braiding, rifles, shooting and that sort of thing. And anyhow, the time came when I wanted to join up, but see, I'd come through the Battle of Britain time and seen the RAF pilots, all these chaps with their gongs up and top button undone, you see, all this made an impression on little boys, you know. Everybody wanted to be Paddy Finucane or one of the big aces, you know, Sailor Milan. Somebody wanted to be one of those. See. As I say, went off to Romford, that was our place where we had to join. And of course, this sarcastic so and so, he turned around and said, "We've run out of Spitfire, sonny, you know, you'll have to do as you're told." And that was it. And I joined the Royal Air Force, and they got a medical examination, A1, passed that okay. And I was called up virtually 4 days after my birthday, 18th birthday, and off I went.
What happened then?
Well, I had to report to Romford, take a brown paper and string, so I could wrap up my civilian clothes and send them back to Mother. So I reported there, and then we went off to Cardington in Bedfordshire, and that was about 4 or 5 days there. We were kitted out. We had to, being a volunteer, you had to swear an allegiance to the king. You see, you had to go, you were separated from the conscripts, and you swore an oath of allegiance to King George VI. And then we then went up to Great Yarmouth for 6 weeks, square bashing, as they called it. This was all military, amazing what the Royal Air Force could do with fellas in 6 weeks. You see them all turn up there, draggled, you know, and suddenly, you know, they come to the end of it. They're marching along the front with fixed bayonets. You'd never believe it. They all look like guardsmen. Fantastic, you know, what the Royal Air Force was. What had happened was the Royal Air Force had taken over Great Yarmouth, as indeed I think they took over Bridlington and other towns around the coast, and they used them for the initial training of the small arms drill. And then after the 6 weeks, you were then posted out to various stations to await call to the technical school. And I was sent to Marham in Norfolk. And on that was 139 Squadron, Mosquito Squadron. They were pathfinders, and I mean, I was excited. I mean, the first time operational station, here I am in the middle of all these people, but I was an untrained flight mechanic, that's how they described you, and I was an AC-2. And I spent a very pleasant time there, but the engineering officer said, let them work alongside the fitters in the hangar so that they get acclimatised, which was rather good. Anyhow, not very long afterwards, I was called to number 5 School of Technical Training at Hensford, on Cannock Chase. And the initial course was as a flight mechanic, airframes, and that lasted about, I think I was at Hensford for about 6 months.
Can you give any details of what was involved in that training?
Yes, you went in there. The first thing they did was they put you through basic training of engineering, the basic training, and then you went on to hydraulics, theory of flight, various reading micrometers, various sort of engineering projects, and then you go back for revision. At the school, it was incidentally very, very good schooling there. Workshops, they called it, classrooms. You get the theory side, the practical side, then you go to the bench and you make sort of a bit of metal shape thing, rivets, that sort of thing. You have to learn how to do all that sort of thing. It's all new to me because I'd never done it before. But and at the same time, they were educating you as well. They were teaching you English and maths. These education officers. And if you wanted to learn more, you see, I'd realised very quickly when I joined the Air Force that my education was limited, having just had an East End education in an elementary school. And although I'd gone to evening classes as well, I realised that I needed a better education. And it was the Royal Air Force that gave me an education, an exceptionally good one, because I never stopped learning in all the 5 years I was in the Royal Air Force. Anyhow, this first station lasts about 6 months. And fortunately, you see, I hadn't been out of school very long, so I was quite reasonably bright, anyhow. So I was able to give good answers in the VV, as they called it. That was the vocal examination at the end. And I got a first class pass, that's AC1, as they called it. There was a higher one than that, which was leading air craftsman, but AC1 was quite good. And I was then posted out to a night fighter squadron at Wittering, and then to Colerne in Bath. So Wittering,